Hi, everyone, and welcome to Hyperfixations, the podcast where we invite various interesting people on to talk about their niche area of interest that they could just talk forever about. Here are your hosts. I'm Ali.
And I'm Nigel.
And today we have Jenny. Jenny, how are you?
Hi, how are we?
Pretty good. Yeah, how are you?
I don't see how that's any of your business. No. I'm good. I'm
Who
happy
are
to
you to
be
ask me questions? Both.
Yeah. Who do you think you are?
All of a sudden, the tables have turned, and this is an interrogation of us.
Yeah, I'm
Yeah,
just excited to ask us the questions.
let me just add all your close friends and family into the group into
You're
the
getting
Zoom
the
call.
whole thing going.
You know, like that show Surprise, Surprise, where they like bring out a bunch of people and like, we actually have these like your old teachers from school. That's what it's going to be, except Jenny has brought a jury of our peers.
Yeah. It all carefully selected. It's been a very long process, but you know, that's what makes it worth it.
Incredible.
I love the concept of a yassified intervention.
Listen,
Yassified intervention.
I think interventions are so tired and blasé, and they need to be like spiced up a little. They need like, I don't know, like I'd love to be like a party planner, but for interventions.
Yes.
Like
Like a fun intervention.
full like say yes to the dress style, except it's an intervention over someone's alcoholism.
Like, what's the theme for this intervention? Be thinking like Alice in
Like
Wonderland.
I'm really feeling like sort of a medieval style like beheading.
And will there be
So
wenches?
my hyperfixation is a beheading. No, just
What
oh
is your
my God.
hyperfixation?
My hyperfixation is the wonderful world of RuPaul's Drag Race.
Nice.
Okay. RuPaul's Drag Race. So, how did you first get into the wonderful world of RuPaul's Drag Race? And why have you brought it this week?
I brought it this week because RuPaul's Drag Race is something that I have been a very active viewer in for almost 10 years now. I've watched every single episode of every single franchise of every single season multiple times. I've watched hours and hours of bonus content made by the production company World of Wonder, who makes the program, as well as by fans, as well as by contestants that were previously on the show. I don't go a week without watching at least a couple episodes and a couple of hours of podcasts or YouTube analysis. Or, yeah, essentially, I have never gotten sick of it. And up to this point, we're still going strong.
And how long is up to this point? Like, how much real estate does the wonderful world of RuPaul Andre Charles encompass?
So let me tell you what. RuPaul's Drag Race started off as a show on a small queer focused TV channel called Logo TV. It was produced by World of Wonder, which it still is, and that was the US franchise. The franchise has moved across different stations and different channels and different streaming networks as the popularity has grown. Now the main franchise is in its 15th, has just finished its 15th season, with now going on to 8 seasons of All Star seasons, which is a spin-off where they bring old contestants back. There are 3 seasons of Canada's Drag Race, 3 seasons of Drag Race España, 4 seasons of Drag Race UK, 2 seasons of Drag Race Philippines, two no, 1 season of Drag Race Philippines, 2 seasons of Drag Race Thailand, 2 seasons of Drag Race Down Under, and there's a Belgian one, there's a Swedish one, I'm sure there's a French one, and I've seen every episode.
My God.
That's
So,
a lot of Drag Race.
yeah.
I love it.
So, RuPaul's drag face. The face of RuPaul has really sort of taken the world by storm. But like, how did it get so big? If, as you say, like it started off as on a very small, queer-friendly focused network.
So how it got so big was essentially RuPaul met the two producers of Drag Race, and the producer of World of Wonder, and they pitched this idea of Drag Race for 10 years. They saw reality TV was starting to take off, and they really wanted to get in on it, and they thought, you know, RuPaul would be able to bring it. RuPaul, who had previously had her own talk show, who had really popular music in the 90s, it was quite a revolutionary idea at the time in American culture. Obviously, in the UK and Ireland, drag is a lot more like everyday. Like you go to your panto, you go to a bar in Spain if you get to go away, and there'd be a drag queen just serving the drinks. They'd be, but in the US, it was quite revolutionary for the time. And so from then, they eventually got picked up by Logo TV. They had such a tiny budget. They filmed it in the basement of the office building of World of Wonder. People just went on not really knowing what it was going to be, what it was going to become. People didn't think it would become of much. But it was kind of successful with the first season. It had a small fan base, but just... And nothing really. It was just kind of casual viewers. But Logo, because it was a small network, they renewed it for a second season and then a third season. And it was in the third season when Drag Race had its first little explosion. Perez Hilton, who I'm sure you've heard of, is who ruled the 2000s, he was a guest judge on season 3, and he leaked onto his blog who was the winner of season 3 before the season had even aired. And so that just completely exploded the season of Drag Race to another audience. It gained more notoriety, it gained more drama, and then from season 4 and 5, it just grew. So that was quite the controversy, and it completely changed how the show films. It completely changed the format of the show, because there was a sudden interest and a sudden kind of hunt for fans to try and find out spoilers and to try and find out just how what happens before the show airs. And so And that has just created such a spoiler focus within Drag Race viewers. Like a season will be coming out at the end of next year, and people will be like, oh, well, I already know who wins. It's like, but how they try and get around that now is through, they film multiple endings, and then they choose one and they just put it up at the last second, which is good fun.
Because wait, what? That feels like cheating, no?
Well, what happens is, like, so they film like right up to the finale completely, and then usually it's some sort of lip sync at the end, and so they film like multiple winnings of the lip sync, and so everyone kind of gets their moment, but they only air one. So not even the people that have filmed it knows who's going to win.
Oh, damn.
It's literally like Alcatraz. But anyway, from then, the show just kind of exploded with four, five, and six being considered the quote-unquote golden era of Drag Race. It's produced probably the biggest queens the show has ever had. It is sort of a period that the show constantly tries to relive. But in saying that, the show has only gotten more popular and gained more reviewers and won more Emmys as the years have gone by.
Okay. What queens were during that golden era of 4 to 6? Because my sister is really into Drag Race, but I've only seen a couple episodes from like season 13 when it was coming out. That's all I've really seen. So like I've heard names, but like I don't really know Drag Race.
So Drag Race really in its infancy from seasons kind of one to three. It was still kind of finding its feet. It's still kind of finding what it wants the show to be, what it could be. But seasons 4, 5, and 6, they just hit the ground running. They just have characters that are very different from each other and contrast each other. And so it gives fans a more distinct set of queens to root for. For example, from season four, you have the likes of Chad Michaels, you have the likes of Fifi O'Hara, who now Jeremy, who completely a lot of controversy around the show is in its editing, and Jeremy, who was a finalist on season 4, has now completely quit drag because of his treatment on the show. But then in season 5 and 6, you get the likes of Bianca Del Rio, you get Adore Delano, you get Alaska, Jinx Monsoon, Willem was on season 4, and these characters kind of become bigger than the show itself. Eventually, later on, you get to on season 7, you get to Trixie Mattel, who is probably the biggest star to come out of the show. She has a makeup company, she has a renovation show on HBO, she has tours, sold out concerts. She kind of does everything, and so
I'm like 4 handshakes away from Trixie Mattel.
Oh,
tell us how.
So I know my sister who knows someone from, it's like one of the teachers from her school who has met Trixie Mattel.
Ooh.
Incredible.
Ooh.
It's like the same number of handshakes as I am from JFK as well. Yeah, this is something I discovered recently. So I have a friend called Chris, and Chris's grandfather is a senator from Philadelphia with a Wikipedia page, and he met John F. Kennedy.
No.
Girl.
Now, I don't want to say, I feel like Philomena Kunk when I'm like, which was great, had a greater impact on history, John F. Kennedy or Trixie Mattel?
Trixie Mattel.
And I'm so glad you brought that up. Again, tricks. I suppose to discuss individual figures within the franchise, Trixie has been a polarizing one in a way. She's immensely popular. Overall, I would say, but
when on season 7, her first season, she did not do very well. She just kind of did mediocre. But it was after the show with her partner Katya Zamolochikova. That they produced a web series, which sort of became its own beast in itself. It became hugely popular online. There was loads of memes made of it. It was the perfect storm for them, which catapulted her onto the third All-Star season, which was kind of made for her to win in a way. After another contestant dropped out, she was a clear person that the production was favoring, which fans did not take to very well. The fans are very protective of their show and of the queens. And when they feel there's too much meddling, they often turn that on the queen that's being favored. And so her win as a Drag Race winner is quite controversial, even to this day. But in her own right, she's still kind of held up as this perfect, well, not this perfect, but this kind of the success story of Drag Race in a capitalist hellscape.
You mentioned that the editing, like there have been controversies around the editing. Could you go into that a bit more? Because that seems interesting.
Absolutely. So obviously all reality TV show is edited. It is, they have story producers. They condense hours and hours of content in order to create a story from events that happen. In America, the rules around this aren't as strong, so they can really manipulate what you say. They can change complete settings. They can use clips out of
Right.
context. In the UK, they have much stricter laws about that you're not legally allowed to do it, following all the Love Island stuff that it was brought in to help protect the image of people on reality TV shows.
Oh, yeah.
But in America, that's not the case. And so often you find queens going on the show and then complaining about being given a villain edit, which with a fan base so passionate about Drag Race can really just become so nasty, particularly to queens of color. There's so much racism within the Drag Race fandom, and like white Twinkie queens are huge, even if you just look at the following numbers, are hugely favored. And that's in part due to the fact, like, the producers of the show know this, they know that, they know who's going to be popular going into it, so they favor certain queens and they kind of create villains of other queens, which in a racist society, like, in turn often means that queens of color are given a disadvantage when they go into the show. But as it's the biggest platform in drag, it's even today, even though the impact of being on the show has lessened due to an oversaturation of Drag Race, it's still like the best thing you could do for your career. And so it's forced people to just go on it, and that had a completely lopsided, unequal effect of queens of color. Unfortunately, so many things in the editing, people, you can kind of catch out. Sometimes it's really well done, sometimes it's really quite poor. But the editing of the show, I suppose, is what makes it. But I suppose when people's lives and careers are at risk, I personally enjoy the show more when it's about the queens doing well. I find it really rewarding to just see queer people be really good at things and do things successfully.
I guess it's just something I relate to. No,
I guess it's just something that, like, I just
they hate to see a girl boss winning.
You know what? That's one thing, and I just think it's disgusting, vile, and malicious.
And I just really think that that's what I enjoy from the show. And of course,
I enjoy a bitchy fight, but that's because I'm only human.
I mean, fair enough.
But the issue is there are a portion of fans, younger, Drag Race is quite a young fan base, that if someone fights with their fave, like only last season, one queen's Instagram account, a queen of color, of course, was removed 3 times throughout the season because of mass reportings made on it because of her behavior on the show. And like your social media is your livelihood. It is how you make gigs. It is how you promote yourself and help yourself stand out. But like that just happens. That just happens if you attack the pretty white twink on the show, like, that is a reality of what happens.
Yeah, and it's like, you know, like you said, like, social media is like, you know, like your livelihood, like with that, things like that, and then like to have that kind of upended, like, and like have that removed because of like mass reporting, like, is fucked up.
Yeah, and like, obviously, like I said it earlier, but like with even the social media numbers, like, it's such an uneven playing field. Like, the moment a new cast is announced, you can just see like the same story happening again and again of like the people of color from poor backgrounds
are just completely neglected by the majority white fans. And like because the fan base is so white and young, like, they gravitate to a white young queens, but in turn, that just reinforces the inequalities between communities that obviously go back hundreds of years, but the show hasn't done really that much to address this. It touches upon it, but the way they engage with racism on the show, they've often punished queens that have spoken out against racism. On season 10, they had a queen called the Vixen, who, like, one queen, Aquaria, who was a white twink, cried when Aquaria was giving out to her, the Vixen was giving out to her, and the Vixen stopped in her tracks and said, "When you cry, you make me look like a monster, because this poor white woman is crying over this black person, this mean black person, and that's a narrative that is put across by white fragility on the show." And the Vixen,
there's no weapon so deadly as white women's tears.
No, yeah, but literally, like, and then the Vixen was then, you know, painted as this troublemaker. He was always angry and always fighting, and like. And she's just been she was just completely mistreated because she was just standing up for herself and she was giving out to the white twink who eventually won the show.
Yeah.
Yeah. And because as well, what a lot of people fail to take into account as well is that, drag is taken from, like, queer, obviously, but, like, primarily people of color's cultures. Like, that's where it originated. And now it has become so dominated by white twinks.
Absolutely. I mean, like, it's become, I mean, like, in terms of Drag Race, a major criticism of it in recent years, I just talked about how bad Drag Race is, primarily, but I think it's important to say that, like, you know, I love it because it showcases so much queer joy, but it is still a neoliberal nightmare. It commodifies and individualizes queer performance that originates in working class people of color who just had nowhere else to go, and so they had to find community and they thrived in it. And so Drag Race and sometimes become a bastardization of that culture. Like, it uses ballroom terms, like voguing, the category is for their runway sequences. They do a lot of noguing. They do they make constant references to ballroom.
What is noguing?
Noguing is, it's an effect, well, not very affectionate term, of like when gay people who have no connection or no training in voguing think they're voguing. So they might like do a little like wave of the face with their hands and they're like, "Ooh, girl, I'm Madonna, you can't take it."
Oh, Mama, right. Yeah. And so, I know exactly what you're talking about now. I've seen that. I've seen people do that in real life.
Yeah, every white twink with a crop top in Mother is
you go into the George and there's just like 100 of those motherfuckers.
They're everywhere.
And like, that's, you see, I think that represents a broader issue of like queerness in its truest form, like, is everything. I don't want to say it's everything Drag Race isn't, because Drag Race is, I think, because of weird, I'm just so deep in like queer culture and queer shit that like I think I'm disconnected from a broader consensus of queerness, because obviously a broader audience, middle America, would see Drag Race and think it is the most insane shit they've ever seen in their whole lives. But to me, Drag Race kind of represents, in recent years they have tried to counteract this. For a while it was just such like this kind of white gay audience that they were trying to appeal to, and now I feel they've gotten a lot more queer. They had their first trans woman to win the main franchise. They had this year. They've only in the last 2 years they've allowed trans women who've had any operations onto the show, which is a huge issue within. A lot of the queens come from the U.S. pageant systems, which is a major thing in queer scenes, drag scenes, in particularly southern states. A huge drag pageant culture. And so, but that's an issue in so many of the main the main pageants, and Drag Race sort of took that and they replicated it and continued that discrimination on a much wider level. But thankfully, in recent years, due to backlash from fans, there has been a change.
Yeah, I was going to say that, like, I feel like it's like you said on the broad scale, but like I was just thinking of like, because it feels like a lot of it is that a lot of things that are from Black culture and other like people of color, and they're kind of reappropriated as like queer culture and
yeah,
like by like white queer people, by fellow white queer people. And it's like, you know, it's like kind of similar things taking like, you know, phrases that are from AAVE and like saying like it's like Gen Z slang.
Very much.
And like, but it is good that you said that, like, you know, that even if the show hasn't always been particularly helpful, that there has been that backlash from fans.
Completely. And like the fans are very quick to point out things. And in recent years, it's become a lot like the show has listened more. Like we've gone from on season 4, like contestant Jiggly Caliente was told she wasn't allowed on the show unless she stopped taking her hormones. And so she had to, like, so many queens had to stop going on, like had to detransition in order to go on the show because the show was so focused on appealing to a cis audience that would be fascinated by the transformation. And now, over years and years, eventually they had Sasha Colby, who is an out and proud trans woman, with a breast augmentation and hip augmentation and injections, this, that, and the other. And so we've really come a long way. But the show in other ways has become more unequal because like queens spend upwards of $10,000-$30,000 on their packages for the show that they pay for themselves, of like what they bring with them, which in turn just furthers class divides within the state, which of course in the States is a lot more along racial lines. And so like that just feeds into another level of racism within the show, and that's perpetuated by the show. And of course, when I say this, Drag Race isn't alone in this. It's obviously across the board and a much broader issue, but Drag Race and the beast it's become has so much further to do to make sure that they're taking everyone along with them. But I think
I think
Drag Race is a, as I said, a neoliberal nightmare from the word go. And so yeah, I struggle to think how much you can expect from them, but we'll see.
I mean, also, like, what do you expect when it's run by someone who apparently saw a man drowning in the Hudson River and their only response is to
when I found this out, and like, I remember because like it was a tweet about it, and I just tweeted like a quote tweeting like, this has actually just ruined my day.
Did I do a dramatic reading?
And like Louise messaged me afterwards, and she was like, yeah, I see you have become like a curse with the knowledge of like RuPaul, like seeing a man drowning and just
I'm going to do a reading.
Please do.
I feel like this is integral to anyone's understanding of Drag Race.
So important. RuPaul is insane. RuPaul is an insane human being. And like, and I mean that with all the love of my heart. Okay, so here we go.
I've never seen RuPaul do one thing that I would categorize as normal human being behavior.
In fairness, me neither.
Honestly.
I remember once I had this place that overlooked the Hudson River, and I saw this guy on a sailboat and it had capsized, and I went to the phone thinking, I've got to call someone. But then I thought, what's the best thing I can do? You know what? I'm going to pray for this person. I'm going to send them loving energy. He does not say whether the man survived.
Like, what's the best thing I can do? Call someone.
I think he should be given a sainthood, and I'll say it. I'm not afraid.
Oh my god.
But one of the questions I had there when you were talking about sort of the like rising inequality that Drag Race seems to coast along on, and you know, like it's getting better on. But why does Drag Race not pay for the packages that the queens have when they come on themselves? Like, why must the queens do it out of pocket?
You see,
like, especially now when it's this big monolith of like being like, I get when they were starting and it was like such a place to launch drag queens' careers, it made sense for them to not have the budget to pay for this and for the queens to like bring everything they could so they could get the most out of it. But now it's such an establishment. Surely, I don't know.
Absolutely. No, absolutely. I mean, like at the start, the queens were very much coming in with like, who has the best dress from Forever 21? And now they're coming in and it's sort of shaped the Met Gala. The Met Gala has been Drag Race-ified because people are just trying to do stunts, because that's what Drag Race brings every single week on people's television. And so, like, in recent years, they've helped give, like, maybe a couple $1,000 to the queens. But, like, for some of the outfits, like, a couple $1,000 is maybe the cost of a one wig, like, of what some of the queens are wearing or some of the outfits
that
they're bringing. Like, it is, like, extraordinary. And like Drag Race makes millions and millions and millions and millions. And like I think last year there were 2 weeks of the entire year that a Drag Race episode didn't air. Like it's not like they're stuck.
Is that across all of the franchises you mentioned at the start?
Across all of the franchises, but like that. But like I think it also just applies if you did US All Stars and UK and Drag Race Down Under, all the shows that RuPaul hosts. So not even because on other shows, other queens host it, but RuPaul hosts those four.
Who hosts the other ones then?
Let me tell you what. So it's really interesting with the other hosts of the show, because to my knowledge, yes, none of the other hosts are winners of the franchise. Currently, all the hosts of the other franchises are mostly queens that were on the US version, but hail from other parts of the world. So we have Brooklyn Heights, who was on season 11. She is Canadian and she hosts Canada's Drag Race. Canada's Drag Race, as I think it's gone, I think it's had four seasons, but I'm... Canada's Drag Race is not my favorite. And then you have France, which is ran by, oh my God, what is her name? Anyway, someone that came literally ninth in the show. Like it really is, they just pull whoever's vaguely okay at it. Who's vaguely like French. I just got her to do Drag Race France. And then we had Valentina announced to do Drag Race Mexico, which is due to come out this year. And it's just all like, I find it quite a strange concept because, you know, RuPaul is untouchable she's never competed on the show and she founded the show. And so of course she should be judging it. Whereas if you look at the other ones, I don't know, it's a different dynamics between the queens, because like this queen is judging you and trying to pick who winner when she couldn't win, or like this queen.
Yeah, it's like by what right?
Yeah, and like this queen has lived in Canada all her life. Why are you here doing Drag Race Belgium? Like it's kind of crazy, but I think that I think unfortunately, due to Drag Race's popularity, it's just started to, the wheels have started to come off a little bit in that, like, it's just a little less prestigious and a little less impactful for the queen's careers now. Like before, if you were on Drag Race, you were the 10 biggest queens in America for years. Years you were just on it, and now you might be big when your season is airing for 10 weeks.
But
Drag Race España is airing right now, Drag Race Belgium just finished, as well as Drag Race All Stars is airing right now, And so like there is an oversaturation, which some people, a lot of people say, well, you can never have too much. It's just good fun. But I suppose I view it as a resource for queer people and for the queer people on the show. And so I think the oversaturation hurts them, and it hurts them, and it hurts the people that do worst on it. And so the most, and even if you win the show, it's not really a guarantee that you're going to be successful, unlike before.
Yeah. Not to take that away from Drag Race, but I feel like this is something that networks don't really understand across all of these like reality shows. Like when you think of back when Britain's Got Talent started, you know, like, because that was the first big like Got Talent one, which obviously like followed on from the X Factor and stuff. And the X Factor as well, like you can name so many like people who won the early seasons, you know, like from Britain's Got Talent. Like they're like household names. You've got Susan Boyle, you've got Paul Potts, you know, and all the people who were on the X Factor in the 2000s and early 2010s, you know, like
One Direction on the X Factor.
One Direction.
And they didn't even win.
Yeah,
exactly. All of that. And now there's just like, I don't think I can name anyone who was on the talent shows at all. Like there was no one really memorable, because that like they're all there. Every country has The Voice, which was like revolutionary in concept when it came out. Every country has its own The Voice, every country has its own Got Talent. So like it doesn't mean anything anymore.
I feel
like the producers of Drag Race, from what you've said, have just gone down that same route.
I mean, like, I think so, absolutely. I still think Drag Race hasn't gone fully down that route, in that, you know, queens that go on Drag Race still tour the world. They still, but like it's just less of them do now. And like it's not a guarantee. But I do think there is a danger in that happening. I think there's a danger in losing what makes Drag Race so special, and it's just seeing queer people exist in an environment that is for them and is used to push them forward and make them, like, the original concept was to make another RuPaul, and it's been a few years since we had a RuPaul, I'll say, but yeah. And I just think it's the show's trying to catch a form of glory, where I think the show needs to focus more on, as I said before, the joy that the queens bring and the talent that the queens bring. And I think we need more talent and more just people that we can fall in love with, and characters we can fall in love with. Because that's what makes the show special. I mean, RuPaul always says that like Drag Race is a, oh my God, what is it? Like a Drag Race is like a story about the human spirit or something. And like, that's what makes it so good, because it's a group of kids that have been thrown around their whole life, and now they're in this place and they have to compete like they're at the Olympics. And it's the perseverance of the human spirit is what RuPaul says. And yes, but now it's a perseverance to get through Drag Race and it just become a beast in itself. And I love it so much, and I just want it to be so good. And I am such, and I don't know if I'll ever stop watching it. It really is something that just brightens my week. There's always a little moment. There's a sense of community from it, which is so rare from TV nowadays, because everything is so streamed. And I just feel like I can walk into most queer spaces and go like, did you watch Drag Race last night? And I feel like that is a connector, and it bonds people, but also I think it's perhaps contributed to a lot of downsides, but I do think it's a really wonderful thing, and I think it's so special.
Yeah, it definitely seems on the whole to like promote an air of positivity and inclusion, you know, especially with the and I feel like I'm going to get this line wrong, because as I say, I've not seen Drag Race, but the, you know, if you don't love yourself, how the hell is anyone else gonna?
Yeah, how the hell are you gonna love somebody else?
How the hell are you gonna love somebody else? That's it, you know? But like,
from what you've been saying so far this episode, it's like sort of hit and miss as to whether that actually achieves that aim, especially in like representing and uplifting minorities and actual queer people.
It's sort of,
it's got a solid foundation.
It's, but like, I don't think it, I don't even know if it does, like, because I mean, it is like all queer media not made by a trans person in their basement with on an iPhone 10, like it is just this kind of neoliberal nightmare of, they push this idea of everybody say love, if you can't love yourself, how are you gonna love somebody else? And where, but it's just built upon taking these traumatized kids, making them spend thousands and thousands of dollars in order to get a bite of some sort of success in a world that just hates them. And if they don't, then they'll stay where they are and they'll never be able to get out of it. And it's a nightmare. And every week they give new challenges of how to overcome in the real world, things you could possibly do, who's going to be the best at it. And it just sort of, it's just a neoliberal nightmare.
Yeah, and as well, at risk.
Ooh. I guess I'll sing a song. You've muted yourself, Nigel.
Yeah, hold on, sorry. At risk of making things too real, like a lot of what drag queens are facing now, like, is stuff that Drag Race can't really prepare you for, such as, you know, transphobes coming for drag queen story hour. I don't know how RuPaul is going to,
I think that would be that hilarious. In tonight's
latest,
like, I don't know how RuPaul's gonna fix this one.
It's this... just this lip sync for your life. We've got a bunch of transphobes and they've got to lip sync or else we shoot them.
In this week's maxi challenge, you'll be reading to a group of five toddlers while a group of Nazis outside shake guns at you. May the best woman win. Like,
hey,
like, I think it's, and like, RuPaul was, and criticized,
we all cheer for how brave RuPaul is.
And like, RuPaul was criticized for a couple weeks because the show wouldn't speak out against the stuff that was happening in Tennessee with the drag bands, and but now they've doubled down and they have come back to it. But like, I don't know what people expect from a show that, like, it's not built to like everyone hold hands and give each other little kisses. It's built to make money and win Emmys and get advertisers, and like, and I think people need to stop like kidding themselves that it would be anything else. But as much as I want it to be, and I think it could be, and I think it could be, but I don't know if it ever will be. Something for queer people by queer people, because currently it's for advertisements, I suppose, like most pride celebrations now.
It's a tricky one, like, for sure, like, because it's like you said, it brings a lot of queer people like a lot of joy, and but
I love it, it's my favorite thing, it's like my favorite TV show.
Like, it's, you know, like people love it, like, you know, and that's really cool. But then it's like, at the same time, it's like, you're like, it could be like, you know, like something more, but like, will it ever be? Like, maybe not.
I love this trend, and especially like, because this episode and the last episode is like, brings topic to hyperfixation for discussion, prefaces it with, this is my favorite thing ever, and then goes, and here's all the things that are wrong with it. and I really wish it could be better.
But like, I love it with all my heart. And like, as I started watching it as a closeted trans person who had no confidence and who was awkward and who couldn't express myself. And then I saw people like Bianca Del Rio, like genuinely, like I saw Bianca Del Rio on season 6, I saw Jinx Monsoon on season 5. I saw Sharon Needles, who is a rotten person, but like at the time I was just watching and I was like, I feel like I can do that. And I feel like I can be be that. And like I said at the start, like, I know because we're so like in deep within queer discourse and queer what we want for a queer liberation. But at the end of the day, the most impactful thing Drag Race can do and does is show queer kids and in all boys school in North Dublin that, hey babe, you are going to be a beautiful, talented angel and you can do whatever the fuck you want, because
and you are and you can.
Yeah,
exactly.
And, like, which is cheesy as it is, but like it genuinely did. Like I was really, I was starting to lose all confidence in myself when puberty started, and then I just watched Drag Race and I would watch it in secret, and it was this Bianca Del Rio's sharp wit, and like it just gave me a confidence to walk into every room like I was the funniest person in it. And unfortunately, I've never been able to turn that off, so I'm a monster now.
You're like, I only became more powerful. Like,
yeah, it's
Interviewing Jenny from her prison cell.
Hey guys, the Wi-Fi has been crazy, but you know,
I got too powerful. Like,
through one of those, you know, the cell phones and for the glass dividers.
Yeah, guys, it's so lovely seeing you here under this fluorescent prison lighting.
So, I'm so glad you could make Visitor's Day.
I know, I really appreciate it. And I know I know my schedule's so full with yard work, 1 hour mandatory exercise.
Like, you know, the Filipino
building a prison library.
It's like the Filipino home thing. It's hard to believe that we're just like, you know, like having a normal interview, because we're not. We're actually interviewing Jenny like in prison.
Yeah, and listen, like all trans people,
dangerous.
I'm just trying to invade women's spaces, and so I'm so happy to be in this women's. So thank you for validating me, ally.
Thank, yeah.
Hey.
This is going to be our most popular episode with transphobes, for better or worse.
Guilty.
Guilty. No, this has been so much fun.
This has been so much fun. And
if
like,
people have complaints, fuck off.
Yeah.
Like, if we've had complaints, okay. Like, not my problem.
If people have complaints, like, I get it. As a groomer myself, I hear, I'm just, that's too much.
Transphobes are gonna lie,
guys. Guilty.
I think you bamboozled them.
If you can't groom yourself, how the hell are you gonna groom somebody else? Can I get an amen up in here?
Oh man, like they're like just transphobes gonna scream.
Yeah.
Fully chaotic.
So do I say what I want to plug now?
Well, it's like, you know, it's like you're saying, it's like with like Drag Race, it's like with Drag Race, it's like, you know, saying even if it is like, you know, kind of a bit of a neoliberal nightmare, like, you know, like that doesn't mean it can't, like, you know, bring joy to people and like
for sure. And like that. I'm very aware that, like, in all these conversations are so nuanced, and ultimately,
absolutely,
it's a TV show about clowns. But you know, I love clowns, and and it's really taught me a lot about not taking life too seriously, like taking the piss out of everything, and just trying to have a good time. Like RuPaul's always like, and you better make me laugh. Like every room I go into, I try to make someone laugh. And I think it really just adds a little brightness to the world. And I think it has done like an overall good, but I am a green bottom and I want more.
Oh my God. Look, I didn't need to be called out like that on my own podcast. Okay.
There's like,
so
no,
I suppose,
need.
Yeah, no need. Like you're entirely correct, but you did not need to say that.
Guilty.
guilty. What was I going to say? Yeah, if you were to impart to the listeners one message that you've taken away from watching all of Drag Race, would it be that to, you know, try and make someone laugh every day? Would it be something else?
It would genuinely be, don't take life too seriously. Life is serious, but when you go into a room, well, life isn't serious. But when you realize that and you go into a room and realize, oh my God, everyone's playing pretend. No one knows what they're doing. Everyone just making it up as they go. Everyone just is creating a world for themselves to make them feel better, but everyone's making it up. So you might as well just have a good time, babe.
It's true. Mm. Very true.
Just make up a better story.
Yeah, but like life is not serious enough to be causing people harm, to like just try your best to help everyone. And if you don't do that, I don't know, being transgender is really fun. If my second piece of advice would be quit school, take hormones, and kill God.
Like, you know, if the first doesn't work, like, kind of.
I know. I'm currently on step 3, which is an unspeakable crime, so I can't bring it up here, but listen to the Patreon.
To the, like, bonus episode.
Yes. If there was any reason for us to start a Patreon, it's now, so Jenny can talk about unspeakable crimes.
An 8-hour show of me just talking about unspeakable crimes.
In detail.
And just, it's what I'm here for, anytime.
Yeah, absolutely.
If ever we need a crime expert for consultation, you'd be like, hey, Jenny.
Guilty, because I've done them crime. All.
You're just like, I've committed several crimes.
You're a criminal? Name every crime.
Yeah, I'm an, now Jenny is an expert on the law. It's like, oh, does she have a law degree? No, she's a heavily convicted criminal.
She's like, no, like on the other end, like.
People rarely talk about that as much.
And like, I think lived experience is important, and I think we need to stop invalidating that, and I think it's classist. And I'll say it, I'm not afraid.
Yeah, like, surely a convicted arsonist would know the best ways to protect a building from arson.
And I think we need to have that conversation.
Like,
yeah,
you're not wrong.
Society, listen up.
I think it's about time we have a conversation.
Are you there, God? It's us, Hyperfixations.
We just want to say that we think we need to talk about this. I think we really have something here.
Why is no one talking about this?
Incredible. I feel like that's a good place to wrap it up, unless you have anything else, Jenny.
All I would say is see you all at Trans Pride on July 8th in Dublin City Centre. Ooh, baby.
Hey.
Ooh, baby.
Very cool. Jenny, do you have anything you'd like to plug? Any social media, anything like that?
My social medias is Jenny Maguire, but without an E, on Twitter and Instagram. As I said, Trans Pride, see you there. It's important. It's pride is supposed. If you understood anything I just spoke about the last hour, you are insufferable enough to go to Trans Pride with me, and I look forward to it.
Yay! Love that, Nigel. Where can we find you?
You can find me mainly on Twitter at Spicy Nigel, where recently I've been tweeting "To whom the bell concerns" because I had a terrifying vision of an update to Ernest Hemingway's classic, but it's entirely technology based.
Oh, right? Man.
Yeah. Oh, no. And that, and someone I retweeted, just thought that was so funny. Someone was talking about Breath of the Wild, and they said, I'm over 500 hours in and I still haven't killed Clammy Ganon. And someone said, what the fuck have you been doing? And they said, exploring. Exploring.
What else, Luke?
Yeah, I know, right?
Amazing. You can find me on Twitter at AllieCat_. Ali spelled like alleyway, cat spelled with a K. And you can find me on Instagram at Ali, Ally_K_Keegan. You can find the podcast at HyperFixationsP on Twitter.
Or at HyperFixationsPod on Instagram. Rate and review us wherever you get your podcast, be it Spotify, Apple Podcasts, or as a growl that begins in the back of your throat. Let it out. Let it out. Let it out. If you would like to come onto the show to discuss one of your hyperfixations, please feel free to reach out at any of the aforementioned social media. If you like the show, tell a friend. If you didn't, nobody likes a fucking narc.
And that is all for.
I feel like we need to add guilty to the list of catchphrases the show has.
Be gay, do crime.
Be gay, do crime.
I mean, we do live in a society.
Yeah.
Yes.
I haven't said that in a bit.
Ewa.
And that is all for this week. Jenny, you were an absolute delight. Thank you very much.
Thank you for having me.
Thank you. Goodbye, everyone.
Bye.
Bye.
Signing off. I just need to hit stop recording.